Welcome to the HRA work session. It is May 29th, 2025. Almost through the month of May. 7:31 a.m. in the morning, and I'm going to ask Governor Hawkinson, it looks like you're calling order today.
I can do so. Do you want me to?
I'm calling it to order, but you're going to call the roll?
I'll read the roll.
All right. Manager Neal.
Commissioner Risser.
Here.
Commissioner Pierce.
Here.
Commissioner Jackson.
Here.
Commissioner Agnew.
Here.
Here. Chair Hovland.
Here.
It was the wrong order.
Well, thank you all. As you are aware, this is our third of three working sessions that we wanted to really get our handle around affordable housing goals, priorities, direction. So today, we have a few of us are presenting. We have Marissa, our sustainability manager, Thomas, our diversity, equity, inclusion manager, Jeff, our community health administrator, me, affordable housing development manager, MJ, community engagement manager, Addison, the community development coordinator, and we have Jay, our accountant, who's on the Value Viewfinders team. We have other contributors that are listed that have been part of this whole process, helping, you know, put together the style of work sessions as well as the information that's contained within them. The whole reason we're doing this is that on the 2024-2025 work plan, we had advanced progress to affordable housing goals, including increasing housing options and developing a long-term growth strategy. And so, as staff, we need direction from you all on what does that mean and how will we know when we have accomplished this? And how will you know when we have accomplished this? So, as stated, this is the third meeting that we've had on this topic. The first one, we talked about all the city policies and plans and actions and engagement that has occurred that helps really direct and guide what we've done thus far in the area of affordable housing and how it intersects with, which is why there's a whole multidisciplinary team of folks that have been working on this, how it branches into a lot of different departments. It's not a one department only topic. In meeting two, we reviewed demographics of who lives in the city now, what can current residents afford, what percentage of current residents are struggling to meet the housing prices in the direction that the housing is going in. And that's where the government steps in. You know, the market will serve the market, you know, the market forces, and people are being served by the market. And then there's the government who helps along the edges. And then this meeting is pulling together the information from the first two meetings and helping set direction. Where should we go in the next 2 years? Not infinitely, but for this budget work plan, what is the direction? What would you like to see staff to focus on? So some of the highlights from the previous work sessions was there's been extensive community engagement in creating the policies and plans that called for the creation and preservation of affordable housing, that fewer than 43% of Edina's four-person households can afford a median-priced home, that 22.5% of Edina's school district student population is here through open enrollment, that Edina's aging with 40% of seniors requiring subsidized affordable housing, more than 32,000 people travel into Edina for work, and household size is shrinking with people having fewer children, so more housing units are needed to maintain a population since household size is shrinking.
Stephanie, forgive me for interrupting you, but the 32,000, that's updated because pre-pandemic, wasn't it 40,000?
40,000. So this is based off of deed information. So yes, it was 40,000. And so it's an inexact number. I don't know if we've done a full survey.
Okay, yeah, no, thank you.
And I just finished listening to about 7/8 of the meeting back in February, and a lot of the points that you're raising, we did have Commissioner response to that, And as I'm looking at your slides, I feel like what's missing is the voice of the commission and the comments that we made during the February meeting and the second meeting. I didn't get a chance to review that one. But as I walk in here and I look and I see, you know, the exercise we're about to go through, I think it's important to recognize that, you know, we were saying things that really are critical toward how or if we can move forward, and recognizing that, you know, we need finance, we need, otherwise, you know, all of this, we can say, okay, this is what we want, but there are no resources. So I'm confused.
Well, exactly. So right now, today is like envisioning session, and we do, there will be a backstop with, you know, as projects come forward and as we talk with you about financing. How do we achieve success? So this is trying to figure out what would be success for you, capturing all those thoughts from before. But we're not, today we want to hear what you would like to see. We don't have answers to capture all the obstacles right now.
I feel like we all came and participated in those first two meetings, and that what I'm seeing here on the screen and on the wall does not reflect the commission response and input that we have given. And I feel like there's a big disconnect here. And, you know, I would encourage everybody to go back and listen to those first two meetings. So it's frustrating because it feels like we almost didn't say anything at those two meetings.
We're also, I think, just getting started too.
Okay, maybe it'll come up later. Okay.
Well, and then I think it's also we take the information from the three meetings to move forward. This is not, this is a third step. It's not an aggregate of all the discussion that has occurred in the previous two meetings. This is what was presented at the meetings, but not the aggregate of the information that we're getting from you, which can be encapsulated again today with the information that we're getting from you. So benefit
that Julie made, I think that I view that slide as more data driven, and it wasn't intended to capture observations, opinions, thoughts about or vision.
Right, but we had concern about that very information and the way it was presented
and
the data.
Continue to manifest itself.
Yeah.
Just with that sort of background on data.
Okay.
So here's the benefits to creating more affordable housing that we have heard through time. Making sure families and future generations of Edina residents can live and thrive here by making stable housing affordable. Increase those who both live and work locally. When people live in a community where they work, the dollars earned in the community stay in the community. Provide opportunities for seniors to age in community, which will also open older housing stock to younger families. Create a healthy housing market across the continuum, supporting upwardly mobile mobility for families, reducing pressure of entry point in mid-market homes, fostering long-term prosperity. So those are some of the ideas that were captured of why even have this conversation at all. So there are things that the city can control, and there are things that the city cannot control. And so what is not in our control? We don't know what the financial capacity is of the various developers that come to us. We cannot control private sales. We cannot control whether or not someone will sell their home and then it will be, you know, for good or for ill, torn down and made into a luxury home, even though right now it's a NOAA property. We have no control over that. We have no control over market forces. We can't dictate what demand will be. We cannot dictate what interest rates are. We cannot dictate any of those things. We can't really control loss of NOAA. I mean, whether it's multifamily or single family. Private owners can sell to who they want to sell. They're not obligated to sell to the city. They're not obligated to keep it affordable. We can't control what applications come into us. We can't control who walks in our door and says they want to develop in the city. We can't control employment hiring, who's hired, where they live, of the people that are applying for jobs that are in Edina. We have no control over that. We can't control the state, county, or metropolitan funding criteria. We can't ask them or tell them what their appointing criteria should be. We cannot tell them that they need to submit an Edina. We cannot tell them what, that they should focus on certain types of housing over other types of housing. We can advise, but we cannot dictate it. We cannot control resident opposition, that there is going to, whatever decisions are made, there will be some people that are unhappy with those decisions in whatever direction you go in. There's always going to be a level of opposition. And we cannot control school enrollment. We can't tell people where they're going to send their kids to school, be it Edina or a private school or a parochial school. We cannot tell people that move here where they're going to send their kids to school. So what can the city control? We can control future development of city-owned land. We can control zoning and land use. We can control the process of how projects can get approved. Local financial support, whether or not we want to and what kind. We can control response, how we respond to the opposition that we're faced with. And we can control how we set expectations. So there are things that we can control within the universe of creating housing.
I have a couple questions on that. And maybe I'm going too far into the weeds on this, but as I've been thinking about what our goals are and what levers we have, can we say that a specific housing establishment, and again, this probably falls more into like the developer, but can there be something that's for families only, like requires students, or is that not allowed?
We can say for city-owned land that we're looking for multi-bedroom developments. We can put, if a developer comes here and proposes a project, it can be recommended that you would like to see more multi-bedroom units. But you know, there's going to be limits on financial realities of creating it. It's more expensive per unit to build that. And so there's a balancing act that would also need to be considered.
And you can't control that it's a family moving in as opposed to a group of people. One other question kind of in that same vein. Can we had, you know, we want people who can live locally and work locally. Can we say that you need to live in the city of Edina within a specific housing development?
There are fair housing laws that would prohibit some of those restrictions.
Okay, that's what I assumed. Just wanted to get the data.
Just to follow up on Kate's question, the federal housing law prohibits discrimination of age and everything, except you can have a seniors only, and that's 55 plus, correct?
Correct.
So if you're looking for a 65 plus, that would violate the Fair Housing Act.
There are two levels of senior housing, one's 62 and one's 55.
Okay, all right.
So there are two levels that can be established.
Thank you.
As I'm sitting here, I did hear somebody when we said we couldn't allow for housing for families whisper, that's not true. And I don't know, I mean, and this is a position where I feel like we need to ensure that whatever, and maybe it is true, maybe it's not true, but compliance is a huge part of this. And we need to know that the ideas that are being rejected or the ideas that are being promoted are compliant. And I know, like at a HRA meeting, you know, the example recently was lowering it from 8%, I mean, lowering it from 10% to 8% for affordable units, even though it was baked into the PUD in that past. And so that this is, I'm sort of going down a tangent here, but as we move forward, we need to ensure that compliance is part of the process. And so I don't know.
Right. I mean, we definitely have to adhere to fair housing laws.
Right.
So there's no way.
Okay.
And then I think when it comes to compliance, there's compliance to federal law, there's compliance to state law, and there's compliance to our own individual policies. And where our locus of control is, you know, depending on what levers we have and what stakes we have in the project as well. I mean, everyone has to comply with fair housing laws.
But how do we ensure that what comes to council is compliant and that we're not asked to vote on something that is not compliant.
But compliant with what, Julie? I think that's what I'm not tracking.
Compliant with our code, compliant with everything. I mean, because I feel like it's not getting screened thoroughly, and so we end up wasting.
We have an application, we have to review it.
Right, but we had that November meeting last year where the HRA approved lowering the affordable requirement for the 7200 project from 10% to 8%, and then we had to backpedal because we would have had to amend the PUD, but that passed. And so I think we need, as a body of the HRA, to know what we are voting on, and we need to know, you know, whether we're wasting time and it's something that is not going to flow.
We're not voting on anything today.
We're not,
so
but we're talking
about. I'm not sure
about
that this conversation is prudent to the workshop.
Well, it is, because, yeah.
Your point is fair.
Okay.
When things come before us, whichever body, we do rely on city staff to ensure that whatever's being forward, it meets whatever standards it needs to. In cases where it doesn't, we still do have discretion to make decisions, right, within a certain framework. And so I think we should just leave that there.
Well, we can
ensure that that's the case.
We can put it in the bike rack too, you know, just the adherence to compliance. Yeah. But
I do think it's a good transition, because what today is about creating those ideas, right? And we may not know all the answers, to your point, Julie, about compliance and all the legalities, and that is our job. But if we don't know where to start digging in to find out what is even possible and where are some opportunities, we're never going to know the answers to those questions. So today is a little bit different. Information about the format for today, emphasis on work of the work session. We asked you to come here today to actually participate in some different activities. So thank you for coming on this journey with us. For today, the majority of today is going to be actually doing moving through some activities, and we have facilitators to help us guide us through the process. The thoughts are not going to be clear. There's no magic wand, but this is your opportunity, right, to share those ideas, make space to hear what others have to say, and we have some really good methods to kind of clump those ideas together and get to, like, what is the focus area of what we're looking for. For today, there's four parts of this. There's part one, talking about that success that Stephanie has alluded to. Where are we headed? We kind of need to know we got to that finish line. Part two, the who are we actually referring to? The what comes into the what types of housing are we talking about? And then part four, that evaluation, kind of circling back to kind of do a gut check that what we kind of have put together and the ideas that we've come up with, how do those actually work into making sure that we might actually get to that finish line? Considerations for you guys, first thought, not best thought, right? Kind of, this is kind of sky's the limit. Like, if you think it might be an idea, it's worth jotting it down. It doesn't mean that it's the right idea. It's the priority. It just might be an idea. Nothing is set in stone. Right, today again is about collaborating, talking with each other, figuring out where we're at, and just putting those ideas down so that the staff, the team, and especially Stephanie can go work on some of these things to bring back to you. We do have what we refer to as the bike rack. We like, from the sustainability lens, to use a bike rack instead of a parking lot to actually hold some ideas. We know there are other things that are lingering out there that you want to know more about, but it might not actually be something that we can tackle for today's conversation. So that's how today is going to work. We do have a timekeeper. Marissa is going to, kind of help us to move us to make sure that we make it through all the activities. Plus, she's taking really good detailed notes. The rest of the individuals are going to help with facilitating today as well. Might be a little bit of moving around out of your seats. So thank you, everyone, for coming to this workshop today. One thing we want to acknowledge before we actually get started is that this isn't an easy conversation. We struggled with this, right, putting this together in a way that made it feel more comfortable, and there wasn't a great way to do it. We want to just acknowledge that everyone is important, right? We want to make sure that we have the and are meeting the needs of our residents, and potentially for people who come here, figuring out what our role is in government is something that we're trying to figure out what we can do best. There are some questions about who is here and how we hope to keep them there. What we're focused on is not the everyone, it's the individuals who might be here that in order to stay here, they might need something that we maybe don't have in stock. So we're not saying that everyone's not important. We already know that you believe everyone is important, but we're asking you to think about those individuals that you might want to say, let's see if we can focus on them so we can make sure that they stay within our community, and how do we attract others to this community as well. So with the first activity, I'm going to hand it to Addison.
All right, thanks. So as Stephanie mentioned, it's on our budget work plan to advance progress to affordable housing goals, including increasing housing options and developing a long-term growth strategy. So there's the first activity. We want to start kind of high level and ask you, what does that mean to you? What would progress towards our affordable housing goals look like? So you all have post-it notes. Like MJ said, there's no like right or wrong answers here. It's just putting ideas down on paper. So we wanted to ask you to write down as many ideas as you can think of what does progress towards affordable housing goals look like to you. Just one idea per post-it, and then we'll come around and pick those up and put them up on the board there. And then we'll circle back in a little bit and try to group those and identify themes. So we'll take about 3 minutes to do that. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Is there coffee in there too? Or you didn't make it?
I didn't make it.
Yeah.
Starbucks in
there.
There's some that's
being
used.
There's some that's
bring from?
Yeah.
Saying like, yeah, I would say also too, things that maybe that we put everything, that even things that you find out, right, are not in compliant or legally we're able to put them, we still would want to identify those. And we at least have a repository.
That's a graph.
Do you have, wait, do you have a, here, can you write it with some markers
on here? On the sheet?
On that, yeah. Right. No, just on your post-it or whatever. You could just, you know, you could just write it on the sheet, too.
No, I'm afraid I'll sleep down too.
Ah, no big deal. We'll get new wallpaper in here. Scott, can we make this over?
I'll come and grab it. I'll come and grab it when you're done.
Or you can get up.
Yeah. Either way.
Scott, can we make this a white erase board? No. Okay. That was the one thing that I miss at the fire station.
It's
all the white erase boards. That's where we used to hold all of our meetings because we would use them.
Give folks one more minute to jot down your ideas.
We're jumping right into the next
thing. I think we decided that we need to give time for the
but he's doing the attention.
Oh,
where do you go?
He's right there.
Right on time.
Everyone was so concerned.
We're like, Jeff, you're up next, Jeff.
Yeah. So Addison will grab the post-its.
And then Jeff, you're taking over now?
Yeah.
Okay, do we need
to
advance this?
Oh, thank you. I was like, how come everyone else gets a fun color?
I've been here for a little over 2 years.
Okay, I'm sorry. Our paths have never crossed.
I know. I don't think I've been to a meeting.
Right. Anyway, good to meet you.
Kate, I might need half your pink post-it. I don't know what happened to my pink ones. All right, there we go. Thank you.
You ready?
Oh, Jeff's jolly.
Okay, so now that your brains are all warmed up,
Addison's gonna group those as we do this next one.
Yeah, take mine off.
So this is a two-parter. We're talking about the who. So first, we're gonna focus on, with the darker pink, retaining people that are here already. What groups of people, just whatever comes to mind, who do we want to retain? What residents do we want to retain in the community? So we're talking about the who, whether that's a, you know, a demographic group or whatever comes to mind. So we're gonna do 3 minutes on retention, and then we're gonna do attraction. But we're gonna start with retention. And that is your hot pick, kind of?
So again, to be really importantly clear, the market is gonna take care of a lot of this. This is for government involvement, where there may be, where can government assist in the retaining and attraction of residents that is not being currently helped by the market.
So if you could wave your magic wand and create housing, who would you want to live in there?
Yep, and keep in mind, we level set you, everyone's important. Those individuals that might need something different, how do we retain them and make sure that there's something in our stock that's available for them? Second part, who do we want to make sure there are opportunities for that we don't have currently?
Without wonky about it, it's Keynesian economic-like theory off of Adam Smith. Government, when the market fails, government steps in. So when the, who's the market not addressing? So government needs to step in.
Is this both a who and a how question?
It's a who. It's how's the next.
I guess a way that I think about it is, like, if we don't have any way to help someone stay here, who are we at risk of having to leave?
But
is that fair?
Is this just about creating new homes, or is this about ensuring their expenses don't rise?
Just about people.
Okay.
The who.
Just the who.
Okay.
I guess, like, an example, like, if someone's getting priced out of their house, they can't afford to stay there.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, this one's hard.
Yeah, I know. I think I have one.
Let's do plus 1 minute.
Plus one.
Right, we're going plus 1 minute.
Are we doing? You're just doing retention right now.
Yep, retain.
Okay.
So who's here now that we don't want to leave?
Okay. And that's usually where I begin.
Yeah, I thought that you're over there.
There's a nice spot for the board right on the
So as kids grow out of the system, they have to leave in order to find help.
Right, Jeff.
We're ready?
Yeah.
Okay, we're moving on to orange pink, I guess. I don't know.
Salmon, coral.
So now we're thinking about groups of people who's not here, or who are the types of residents that we want to attract to Eden. 3 minutes, or should we do 4? 3 minutes. Okay, Marissa's got the time. Thank you.
You'll be done in 2 minutes. And move on. One minute warning.
This is harder than normal.
We need to a large group discussion after this. Or what are you doing after this?
We're gonna group this after this, right?
Yeah.
Start with that next, and then I'll press it as well as talking about.
I can wear it when we're not on camera, but I feel like.
Oh.
When we're on camera, you gotta wear it, yeah.
You don't plan your wardrobe based on being on camera?
That was when I was first elected, Ann Swenson called up and said, don't ever wear a pattern when you're on camera.
I'm gonna pick up the post-its. I'm gonna do that next time. And then Addison's gonna talk through the themes that were kind of assembled in the first one. I'm just gonna take these here.
Maybe, see, I thought it had to be if it was a tight pattern, like if you had more.
No, that would still make the camera go.
Probably, yeah.
Oh, I think so, yeah.
Yours would be worse, I think.
I didn't even think about, but then we're not.
I like Addison this.
I think Addison, you're on.
Alright, I'm on. Okay, so it took all of your ideas for how you would define success and tried to group them into different themes here where you guys had some overlap and similarities. And I guess I'll tell you what I did and you tell me what you think. So I put them into, I think, four groups. So a lot of you wrote down things about housing options for people in different circumstances. So giving housing options to people who work in Edina, increasing variety of housing options, making housing available for retail and hospital, medical, lower income employees, create options for people who don't want to maintain a yard but want to own, providing sufficient housing opportunities for disabled or young adults, help seniors find safe transition housing with walkability, workforce housing options, providing qualifying seniors a chance to stay in Edina. So those were all about just a wider variety of housing types for different people. The second one seemed to be about mostly ownership towards young families. So we had options that appeal to young families, median home value under 600,000, more affordable ownership options, enhance home ownership in some form, and find a way to partner with entities that can match NOAA with home buyers. So these were all about home ownership. And then we had a few that were kind of around funding. So to define success, we need more info regarding how much the HRA budget has been spent on affordable housing. We have a sustainable source of funding to invest in affordable projects. And defining what can be accomplished without financing it, says. And then a couple that were just about just increasing housing in general. So increasing housing stock and increasing density along Vernon that will induce Metro Transit to bring back bus service to Western Edina. Does that seem like a fair grouping of those?
Sure.
Yeah. All right.
One of mine was on financing was outside, without outside finance.
No, outside.
What can we do on our own?
Okay.
What can we do on our own?
Yeah.
Yep. All these other things are now uncertain.
All right, my turn. Okay, so I'll just try to group these. Retention, we have a bucket around retirees, seniors, people who want to downsize. This one is people who are on tight incomes and struggle to stay in their homes. I put that in that same bucket. Does that make sense to whoever wrote that one? Yeah. Adult children of Edina residents with intellectual or physical disabilities. seemed like one to stay on its own. Families with children in school, young adults who grew up and want to stay here, and anyone who wants to live here. That's the attraction. People interested in maintaining NOAA, reducing solid waste from teardowns. Marissa likes that one. One focused on families with school-aged kids, young families, adults with children in Edina, education-minded families of more limited means, put those together. Young single adults, and then this one is mostly about people working in town, people who work in the community already, police officers, nurses, teachers, people who want to live and work in Edina, workforce for retail and medical in town, and school and city employees. Seems like that was a kind of theme. And then attracting retirees, seniors, and elderly wanting to stay and downsize in the community. And then also the families with disabilities wanting to stay in Edina. That one seems like it should stay on its own, or maybe go with adults and children, or is that one?
I think it's more with the one that also is by itself that was mine. Yeah, I think those are the same thing.
This one about maintaining naturally occurring affordable housing?
Oh, no. Never mind.
Okay. I feel like that one is a little bit. I feel like that one.
I had it on the pink side and you had the coral side,
yeah. Oh, okay. So I think we have some common themes here. Okay.
Any questions? Clarification?
Are they in the right places?
Okay, just checking.
Want to understand how we're going to use this, that's all. So don't answer that.
Let's just keep going. Okay. Trust the process.
Yeah, you're two steps ahead. Okay. All right. So, how are we going to use this?
So, this is one of the charts that I know you saw in the last two sessions. What you see on the wall here is basically that chart broken up. So we want you to think about first people, so who are we serving and who are we trying to serve, and you just did that really quickly. We want you to think about what success looks like, and you've already started to develop some thoughts on that. So now we want you to think about like the specific housing types that we want to focus on going forward. So you have some red dots in front of you. There are five of them. There are no rules for how you use them, so you can put them all in the same box. You can put them all on the same chart. You can spread them out however you decide to use them, however you decide to prioritize individually. But just thinking about the conversations we've had prior to today, the conversations you've had in community, projects that have come up, and what our needs are, which of these housing types do you want to focus on? So in each one, we have ownership and rental broken out, as well as you can see, new and then NOAA as well. And so again, we 3 minutes.
So on this one, though, are we qualifying? I mean, we're talking about affordable housing. And so is the assumption, if we say we want single family homes, that those homes are affordable?
That would be the assumption, but if you want to write a qualifier on them, like, because we also have on the sticker, yes, since this is affordable housing discussion.
That's all I'm asking.
Yeah.
Okay.
But, I mean, we also, you know, we'll balance it against, you know, success, which has some qualifiers on that.
So the red dots, we support it. It's not like a blocking red dot. Okay.
So this is where we would want to take action as a government to help people who otherwise wouldn't be able to have
your priorities. Like if you want to direct staff on where your priorities are for where we should stick our energy, where do you want it to be? And also to help you guys too formulate as projects come before you, how help you try to weigh out how you're going to view them. And keeping in mind, you know, how you're defining success and who you want to attract and retain. and how does that fit into those different boxes?
Okay, and this is part three or four, so we are gonna go back and revisit what you selected in this section with success.
And this is not like, again, what MJ said, this isn't written in stone. You guys are not taking a vote that's gonna be codified. It's to help give direction.
You can stack your dots if you want. You already are. We can tell you you could do that.
The way I think of it is like, it's almost, it'll be informative for staff too, where there aren't dots.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
But I don't think you guys can make that assumption though. So I think
this is really
when we come back, like, I think you gotta synthesize all of it and come back.
Yeah.
Because I might make a different decision. Like, I care about ownership. And so if I had enough dots, I would have put dots on all the ownerships.
That's why you have a budget.
Right.
We're trying, yeah.
But I think the value is if someone else thinks, well, we need a better balance of rental, then we have to have that conversation.
So give me an example of low-rise multifamily.
So the last three, duplex, triplex, townhome, low-rise multifamily, all fit in the whole umbrella category of missing middle. It's like a three-story apartment.
Right. But we can't build those anymore because of the ADA. I would fill all apartments be sixplexes with a courtyard in the middle, but that's not feasible to be built. It's not.
Why isn't it feasible?
Because you have to have an elevator and it makes it too expensive.
Oh, but I think,
so
that's why I was asking the qualifying question.
Yeah.
I think you shouldn't think about that. If you think that that is something that you want, that you would value, then I think we have to.
Well, I just don't think it can be built
like
anymore.
Like a Diana Flats, I think, is a good example. Of like
know,
a three.
Oh, Diana Flats.
Sorry, Valley View, Wooddale. There's. Yeah.
Can't help with this area, right?
No.
No.
Sorry.
What about the sound apartments? Do you consider that low rise?
No.
That has 70. I would think it's more like 20 units.
Yeah.
I think like smaller multifamily of like, you know, like three to 19 unit multifamily. Yeah.
First floor limit.
People built them.
You have an elevator if you have that many units.
Well, so 4040 has an elevator, but that would not be.
But that would be multifamily. It wouldn't be low rise.
It wouldn't be low rise.
So, I mean.
The other problem here, it seems to me, is that this all is assuming non-senior, so called.
I don't see how you
work in the seniors here.
Well, I mean, could be. I mean, 4040 and Avador fall into this category.
I think you can.
And I think the new lifestyle communities falls into this category.
Can we, but to your point about Edina Flats,
or View 44, those are both small.
Right, and those are both purely residential on commercial land,
I can't picture
non-compliant with code.
Sure, I'm
and
just
so
talking about the housing.
No, but back to the whole compliance issue, and I think, yeah, they got built, but down the road, we could have serious issues with that. I mean, they're not.
I was using it as an example.
Right, but
of
this issue about compliance is pervasive, and we can't keep doing what we're doing. It just.
Okay. Yeah, it's those million-dollar condos. Yeah, which is not affordable at all. Right.
But that's like the size I'm talking about.
Yeah.
For the size,
there's no way to do it.
Right, I know that.
Yeah. And so that's what I'm saying. We're having a conversation.
We've been having this conversation all summer.
She looks like that one that's near France.
Kate, I thought your donut disappeared. Like, I looked over there and I didn't see it, and then it was back.
All right.
I think I'm losing my mind.
We're going to start to transition to part four of this, but just wanted to recap if there is clear interest in the ownership category across, looks like all but the low-rise multifamily. And then there is some interest in rental, specifically multifamily and low-rise multifamily. So I know that we asked you to prioritize really quickly, and we were really intentional about just 5 dots. We know that we probably could have had dots in all of the categories. And again, this exercise wasn't to limit our focus as staff or as a HRA, but really just to help prioritize as we continue to think about the future. And so as promised, we are going to take this information that you just did in this exercise and tie it back to success. So I'm going to turn it over to...
I'm going to try. Okay, so workforce housing options. We want housing for people that work in Edina, make available for the lower income employees at the hospital and medical workforce housing. Do you feel that no ownership or new or rental new or any of these help you achieve entry level, lower wage workers in Edina?
Well, that's, I know. That's too broad, because a city employee is going to be able to hopefully make enough money to buy a home. Orderly at the hospital won't be able to buy a home regardless of what level. So that's too broad to narrow it down.
Okay. From my understanding, based on the data that we have from Deed, the incomes of a lot of the employees in that for the jobs in Edina, you know, Southdale, 50th and France, the hospitals, are of the lower wage jobs. And for ownership housing, there would probably be, and we don't have to make it, again, this is not decision making, it would be heavily subsidized. Because if they could afford a $200,000, $250,000 home, that has a bearing on whether or not the focus to address them is in this category. It would probably have greater gap. Again, not making that decision now, but just highlighting it. Where multifamily rental probably is more in the area that would serve that income level of folks that work in Edina at service industry type jobs would be more in the line of NOAA rental, which we guide them to, but if they sell and flip, we have limited control over that, although we have help. We're trying, working on preserving some NOAA. And there may be in some area of this, depending on the level of subsidy, again, if it's going to be a $250,000-ish, $300,000 home, the level of gap will be different if it's in this category, if it's lower density. Seniors, retaining seniors and allowing seniors to stay in the community. We talked about that a little bit. And in this area, it's probably not going to serve seniors in this category that want to stay in the community but want to downsize. Where seniors may get served more is in this area.
Can we go back to that, though, the single family? Because I think we could be a city where you could have more homes being built that are smaller in size if we, you know, went back and we looked at, you know, and one of the tools is our zoning. And, you know, having it written in that if it's under a 9,000 square foot lot, you only have to have 25% pervious surface. If we went back and made it consistent with the other ones, 30%, there is a possibility maybe we could get a little bit smaller homes being built. But, and I think that would be great for, you know, so many things.
For seniors, you're looking at reduced driving, reduced strength to do yard work, things like that. So, you know, that is what prompts people to leave their homes. And so that's, I think, why senior housing is different from regular, from general market housing. So if a senior is vigorous and still driving and still doing, you know, yard work and everything, they're not looking to leave their existing home. So I think that's why senior is different. So, you know, if they're living in a $1 million house and they want to go down to a $500,000 house, is what you're talking about, or, you know, fill in the numbers. But I think when we talk senior housing, we're talking people who are looking at the aging process and wanting to get out of some of the burdens of single family home ownership.
Well, there was an article in the paper recently about a project in Chanhassen that I think is attracting a lot of seniors, and it is small lots, tightly fit townhomes. And that would require a land use. So that's something that, you know, land use and zoning is in your locus of control. So trying to figure out making those connections between land use and retaining and success as, you know, as we move forward.
I think the, this is my observation, but I think the reason you see all those dots on NOAA single family home ownership is because all of us have been in these discussions with the school district, and all of us understand that we're birthing 10,000 fewer kids a year in Minnesota than we were just a decade ago. And our immigrant population is probably going to be affected by national strategies. So what Hazel Reinhart taught us was all the kids are in single-family homes, and the anomaly was, at least for me, the more expensive the house, the more kids there were. So I think my supposition is that we're all thinking that if we want to keep our school district vital, we got to have people coming in with families to be in the pipeline. And to the extent that we can help them be in the pipeline by using the land trust model that we've got with about 15 houses, that's a good thing. And so I think you're seeing a kind of a primary emphasis on that amongst this council. Thinking that's priority number one. How do we keep our town vital and keep a pipeline of people coming in? We're in it. We live in a town where there's as many people over 65 percentage wise as there are under 18. And so we think about different groups differently, but at the end of the day, how to keep your town rejuvenated and restocked of people that are aging in place is really important.
Well, and I think what comes into this is absolutely the land trust, the partnership. Those are becoming harder because housing prices, we had a limit of what they could spend on house, and that limit is going away. I mean, the limit's still there, but those houses that fit within that limit, it was about 400, 425. Habitat has a problem with spending more than that. They turned down a house because for their mission, it was too challenging. And we're losing them, you know, due to increased housing values and loss of stock. So we do have that program, but we also with Come Home to Edina, you know, was a mechanism that allowed people to move into those homes, and that's on pause. So, I mean, those were some mechanisms that we have.
So where I thought you were going to go is just a tangent off of Member Risser. If this is where we're thinking we should focus, you started with a slide that says, here's what's in our control, here's what's not in our control. And so where I thought you were going to go is, all right, for single family homes, here's what's in our control. These are the factors that make new almost impossible. But if we want to do that, then here's what we as a city can do to influence that. And part of that is funding, part of that is zoning, right? There are some things we can do to encourage those options. And then just for me, like, I appreciate the exercise, but I'm, like, my definition of success, I wouldn't take any of these options off. I want the most options in our community that serve the people who want to live here. And so, like, for me, it's at that level. And so the specificity of saying somebody who has a lower income or who's in this job or that job, But if the options are there, and we don't have, we will never have options to serve everybody. But there are some elements within our community that we actually don't have products available for them. And so I want to solve that. And I want to solve it in a way that makes affordability across Edina better.
So how can we help? I mean, again, we're trying to get guidance from you, but as an example, you're going to be discussing future development of a property. Does this play a role at all in your decision making? And if so, how do we help you with the information that's being provided? If it doesn't play a role in your decision making, I mean, that's fine, but how, you know, do we help provide that information? This is where you own land, you can set the direction. What do you want? You know, and we've gone through some of those exercises and we're now evaluating. Does that play a role in your evaluation? And so, you know, we've been somewhat agnostic about that, but would it be helpful to be less agnostic about the role that is with regards to affordable housing? And so, you know, I my title and my being is an advocate, and I know that that is sometimes troubling because it seems like every time I walk in a room, I have an agenda. And maybe I do, but so we, you know, we try to back off and the decision is yours. But if you need more guidance in having this, these variables play a role in some of these decisions that are in front of you, I guess, do I do that? And because we will take this and we will, you know.
Let me just articulate something that my husband and I have been talking about. So we met when we lived in Chicago in the 1980s, and Cabrini Green was a real thing. And in people's minds, low-income rental and this 1800 number is we'd have to build Cabrini Green in order to meet that. And I think, you know, that's completely off the table. It didn't work in Chicago. It wouldn't work here. And so when the conversation is we have this massive goal, this massive number, and we the Met Council has set it for us, and based on these scientific factors, the reality is we're never going to build Cabrini Green in Edina. Absolutely no way, not know how. And so we have a need for income variety in our city, and I think that we're all agreed on that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we don't want just people who can afford $2 million homes. We want to keep diversity of many kinds, and that makes us a more resilient and strong community. Our tools are limited, okay? If we want to build 100% affordable housing, tall apartment buildings, that would fit the need of what our partners in affordable housing are pushing for. And I just said we're not going to do that because it doesn't work. It never has worked. And so we are a city that's about, what, 93% single-family homes, something like that, 94?
93% of residential land use is single-family.
93% of land use is single-family homes,
mm-hmm.
Okay?
I'm sorry.
And so that is who we are right now and what we're working on. So to transform that into something where there are many rental buildings that are affordable housing is just a massive change, and we're not advocating for that. So what do we have within somewhere between this and this, the middle ground? And so that's what we're trying to express here is we want some middle ground. And when the only options that come before us are 100% affordable housing or apartment buildings with inclusionary housing, we get frustrated because we're not meeting this middle ground. And the small single-family homes that Julie is very powerful advocate for is very, very difficult to deliver, okay, whether it's through zoning or through purchasing them and everything. Okay, that's just really rare. So is there anything in the middle ground where we can serve these, we've identified the people who need housing, who aren't getting it, who are members of our community one way or another. And that's the puzzle. But that's where our, I sense that the community's energy is in this middle area. So we have to have some multifamily because there's a housing shortage. Okay, we just have to acknowledge that. There's a huge housing shortage and we need to build more units, period, end of sentence. But to the extent that we have limited funds and limited energy, I would put it all in this middle area. And this is not particularly helpful for me because we need it all.
Mm-hmm.
But the energy that we have and the tools that we have, we would like to focus. I personally, speaking on behalf of the people I've talked to in my community, want to create some of this, if possible, because it's more like who we are now. So we retain the character of this beautiful city that we have, but it meets a need that's not being met. So I'm sorry, that's my soapbox. But
that's helpful, Kim.
But this really confuses me.
So when you say the middle, you're trying to be in the middle. In your own mind, who do you think we should be trying to provide housing opportunity for in the middle? What do you mean by that?
People who want to live in Edina but don't have the financial or interest in maintaining a yard. Okay, so they want to own their home, but they don't want to have a mower and all that. So that's like a townhome. Or you know, the low-rise multifamily or something like that. So someplace where you can move and live and have an ownership interest, but you don't have to have a garage full of tools to maintain the yard, and maybe you can walk someplace. So a little bit denser than a single-family home and with options to not be a homeowner in the traditional sense, okay? So that's one. And so that would be seniors, that would be people from cultures that don't keep yards, right? We talked about a number of people who live in Eden Prairie prefer to live in townhomes because that's more in line with their culture. So that would be my top priority, and that is several of these options, right? And then also people who are working in our community and have to drive a long distance to get here because they can't afford to live here. And so that would be multifamily, low-rise multifamily. So we want safe, comfortable place to live and potentially walk or bike to work. And so that'd be at 50th in France. It'd be at the hospital. That'd be at Southdale Mall, at Galleria. And those are folks that are already members of our community but aren't living here. And then another subset of employees are government employees, whether they work for the schools, whether they work for the city, you know, they work for Hopkins or Minnetonka or something. That is a higher level of income, but not achievable in Edina currently. And so that's another population, because I think if you're going to work in a community, it's very helpful for the people you are serving to also live here. And that's a policy. And so single family housing, you know, the NOAA preservation is just such a tiny slice of what we can do. What other options do we have for people who have families who are a slightly higher income level but not able to afford a $2 million home in Edina, but we would want to live here? And so those are the areas I'm thinking. So some of it's rental, some of it's ownership.
So I disagree with the way we could focus this. So everything Member Jackson just said, 3 years ago, 4 years ago, I would have said the exact same thing. But now, I feel like it's not appropriate for me to, and you're not doing this, but I'm gonna use this word, to judge people's ability to live in Edina. And so I don't even think about what they make, where they work. I'm not making the assumption that people who work here even want to live in Edina, right? But I used to, right? I used to think that way. Now I am at a point where I think I want to look at the market and I want to have the conversation, which is just a grayer area of where you're going. what products do we have in our marketplace to serve the people who want to live here? And so if somebody wants to live here and is a teacher, then we ought to have some options in Edina for that teacher. The other teacher may want to live in Burnsville because they want to have more land. I don't know. But whatever their decision is their decision. I think for me, our challenge is we just have such few options that are affordable in Edina, like 93% single family homes, right? And our median home value now is, what is it, 670?
Seven fifty.
And so 2 years ago, we said it's going to be over a million, and we're on that trajectory. Mm-hmm. It's going to have median home value. It's going to be over a million. And those macroeconomics from a housing perspective just don't work for sustaining a community. And so this may not be helpful for you guys, but that's how I think about it. Here, the success for me is more houses that are at or below $600,000. Does that serve everybody? Probably not. We probably need some lower than that. But when you look at the law of averages, that suggests we're still gonna have some $10 million, $5 million, $2 million homes, and we're gonna have some on the other end of the normal distribution. But we have to figure out how to be able to bring that product to market. And that's what I don't.
Yeah.
I don't know how to do that. And what so we funding, we talked about that. And it seems like zoning could help us address that. If I used this example before, the house we live in, we bought it for $600,000 and we did a remodel. But that lot is wide enough where it could have had two or three townhomes on it. And each one of them could have had a backyard. But our zoning doesn't allow us to do those kinds of creative things. Now those would have maybe been single family townhomes or something like that.
Or duplex, triquad.
Yeah. And so that's why I think about what's within our control that could help us bring more products to market to serve the demographics that Member Jackson just described. But I don't think we could do it the other way and say, well, you don't make enough money to be in Edina, so you're going to live in St. Louis Park. Like, we've gotten emails from people that say that. Well, if you can't afford to live here, you can go to Hopkins. Okay, you could. However, we should have some options.
Yeah, Jill?
I want to thank both Commissioner Jackson and Pierce for what they just said. And I want to focus on Jackson's point about the middle. Okay. And I also want to say that the tools that are in our toolbox are beginning to look pretty minimal and kind of rusty. And I know this was said at the last meeting we had, but you look at what Minnetonka is doing, and they presented at the February meeting, that was that breakfast meeting that I went to, and they are getting 10 new townhomes, and they're subsidizing it at $79,426 per unit. That's really a good bang for their buck. That's like less than $80,000 municipal subsidy. And we look at what we're subsidizing for apartments in large multifamily. And I think part of what we need to get is an understanding of what we get for our investment, okay? And what Minnetonka has that we don't have is they have a robust financial kind of support from the community. And I don't know if there's any, and we can't do that, but I know there's a lot of interest from the community in affordable housing. There needs to be people who are going to fundraise as well, so that we have a partner with money and it's not just on the back of the taxpayers. I hear what Commissioner Jackson is saying about single family homes. I do know, though, like one beautiful, really gorgeous, well-maintained hardwood floors, the whole nine yards, Rambler, really well-built, near Pamela Park, sold for $477,000, okay? And so, and it was torn down, and now there's this massive new home that is going up there. And I do think with the market the way it is, and also with people, you know, selling their homes, sometimes they sell them really quickly because they suddenly have to move out, okay? And I do know, I have a neighbor who says, I do not want our house to be a teardown, and I want to make sure that doesn't happen. And I'm wondering, you know, if we...
That's all to Stephanie.
Well, yeah. We don't know, but the thing is, it can't just be the city of Edina. It needs to be who are our other partners so that we can better help people who are in their homes who would like to see their homes stay, because you get an emotional attachment to it. Maybe they can reach out to the city of Edina, but maybe there's other organizations as well who can help with that process and also help, you know, because the amount of energy that needs to go into identifying those places and what might sell, reaching out to those people, I think is not necessarily a resource that we have consistently.
Resources right there.
Yeah.
She doesn't have to provide the money, Julie. She has connections as
okay,
well.
Okay, this house was torn down. I mean, I'm saying we could have more resources go
well,
toward it.
But I think we start with Stephanie and then let her come to us and say, we don't have resources we need, but she's an incredible resource. So if somebody wants to sell their home for preservation, she's the one to start with, and then she would find Habitat for Humanity or other.
Okay.
There's also
Let's
limits on that
just
program.
Just a little bit, though,
yeah.
Because there are those people, but there's also people who suddenly sell. And getting that house before the developer gets it is tricky, okay? And so I hear it's continues to happen that houses do sell at prices that are more affordable and they get torn down.
Yes.
Okay.
And
so
that's one of those things that we, at the beginning, we have no control over.
Right, but I think we could have, if maybe there's another organization out there that could help us try
but
to.
But that's why we talked to Stephanie, because she knows everybody in the affordable housing. She's an incredible resource. She's so well connected. That's why she's here. I mean, when we hired her, we're like, oh my gosh, Stephanie's been working this for 20 years, I'm going to make up numbers. And more than that, and so she has a network. It doesn't necessarily have to be the city of Edina that solves it, but she's got a network I can't even begin to imagine.
Well,
when it comes
I
to
think the complexity with this, though, is those programs are working on a wider scale.
Yeah.
It's more expensive for them to do that work in Edina.
Okay, so how do we try to... That's a really good point, and that helps to explain why these $477,000 beautiful homes keep disappearing.
And we can't influence what the homeowner wants to do with their home.
Right, but the homeowner...
We can't.
We yeah. definitely can't, but I'm just saying, and you can all say that's a ridiculous idea, we can't do anything about it, but I think there is room for slowing down teardowns if we can figure out, and I don't know if it's affordable housing advocates who might be interested in trying to... But I mean, just seeing this was so frustrating because it would have been perfect. And it was also on a road where it was between two roads. It could have been a perfect ADU setup because you've got a road front and a road in the back. You know, it was just perfect.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's that.
Kate, what do you think of that?
I'm hearing a lot of like, where constraints are, and it's making me kind of think, like, where does that open the door for differently innovative solutions, right? Like, if we're talking about, and I hear what Member Pierce here saying of, like, no, I can't go and tell one specific person you need to live in Edina, but when we think about teachers, I don't actually know, like hundreds of teachers, right, that work in Edina.
they don't all live here. And I see on the like Edina Moms group of, hey, my son's daughter's teacher wants to move to Edina. Does anyone know of anything? Right? There is that network. But if we can't control that a house has to be sold to a teacher, are there other mechanisms that we could put into place of, if you're a teacher who works in Edina, you get a incentive or something like that? I don't know the answers, but it makes me think more outside of the box of how we constrain or what the constraints are that we have to play with. And are there other options that we could create that still get towards that same goal? Which is why I think it is valuable to understand, like, what is success to us? Because this is daunting when we look. It is so expensive. And when we think about the $477,000 house, like, I don't know how we prevent that unless we're coming up with new, innovative, crazy ideas that might move the needle. But I don't have all those ideas. And so that's where my mind is kind of going. Just like, are there incentive programs or are there different things that we can do that's less of just building net new stock? One of them that I also kind of, I sometimes harp on, right, because of my like thing about parking, but it's like, if you created more dense, no parking housing, how does that also then combat some of the pushback we get on some development of it's going to increase all the traffic and some of those concerns? And if there are different levers that you can pull within a development, there could be ways that we can build up that benefit and that story in a more comprehensive way.
Yeah. So I think one of the things you were trying to accomplish here was you wanted to find out what was important to this council from a retention attraction strategy related to housing. Who do we want to try to keep here? Give them an opportunity to stay here if they want to. Some of the things that we lose or anything. And then who do we want to make sure that we try to attract? Or like James was saying, you know, what products do we need in place to be able to provide attractions? And then it seems to me that for me personally, you get to the point of, well, what could we do on our own where we're doing what we want to do in terms of these issues around attention, retention, attraction. That's important to our town, as opposed to being influenced by outside money from the state or the federal government saying, here's what you have to do if you want our money. Now, there may be some circumstances where we think, yeah, that's okay. We want to do some of these things that would involve state or federal money, but we haven't drilled down that deep yet. So, who you know, it comes back to who do we think it's important to be thinking about here on these issues? And that's what you're trying to get more detail on. I still think it's a little hazy, but probably sort of
so,
a little.
Commissioner Pierce came to us with a whole package of ideas about funding. And the thing was, we needed to have this conversation first before we went out to raise money in whatever way. But I think that what you just said goes back to all the work that he did on different funding sources. So once we figure out what we as an entity want to focus on, then we have to go back and revisit the work that group to say what are the funding options that we, you know, whether we provide seed money and then fundraise off of that, you know, or, you know, what kind of, what flexibility do we have in our funding that's not reliant on these formulas that we've been seeing, the private developers coming to us with money from the state and federal, or state and Met Council and county formulas. So then that goes back to, you know, the full circle back to where we started this conversation. And there was a tremendous amount of good work but I was tripped up because we hadn't had this conversation yet. And we were just following what outside funders were, you know, focusing on. And now we have an Edina-centric focus on where we want our housing to go. Then we need to revisit the funding options, I think is what you're saying, what I want to take from what you're saying.
Yeah, and I would just add that circle on slide three, whatever slide that was, that showed what was in our control.
Yeah.
Right. That's really important slide.
Right. Yeah. I think we look at all of those options.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which includes funding.
Yeah.
To focus on whatever products that we need.
Yeah.
And I do think that this DOT exercise, as somebody said, I mean, it is clear we're missing middle, right? Like there's some synergy around what we are kind of thinking loosely affordable means, right, from a home value perspective. You can imply a lot of that from this exercise. I think we just have to go the next step to then say, all right, with what's in our control, how can we make progress against this? The other thing we had done is we talked to a realtor to ask them the question based on what they're hearing in our marketplace, what's missing. And one of the products is one particular real estate agent said was the, I'm going to probably say this wrong, but it was a flat for seniors, single floor living or something like that. Was one of the products that was missing with no basement, right?
Slam.
And then, you know, maybe two bedrooms, right? That kind of a thing was missing. Now, I don't know what that costs Edina to do today, but we don't have that product for seniors in our marketplace. And there might be some other things, some other insights they may have on what products we need.
I think these housing goals that the Met Council has established for every community that are non-binding are interesting to look at, but you kind of have to take a skeptical view of it because our state's losing population, but they're telling us there's going to be 400,000, 500,000 more people here by 2050, and we're planning accordingly, and it kind of pushes us to, you know, at least from my thinking of, well, what do we want to do that we think is important to do in our town or around this issue of creating housing affordability? Because that issue is there, regardless of whether we're growing or shrinking in the state. The existing population has some challenges around housing affordability, a global problem, both in production and affordability. So the other thing we really haven't talked about is We've had some successes now in affordable housing where we never, before we had an affordable housing policy with just a bully pulpit, we got a few here, a few there. And then with this policy we've had in place, we've had tremendous increase in the number of affordable units. But we really haven't even dissected, and probably would require your help, is are we better off thinking about putting the affordable units in a market rate building at a percentage? Or are the standalone buildings that are all affordable a better way to go? Or is the way we've been doing it as a combination okay? I don't know the answer to that. But, you know,
you can meet production goals faster if you've got a dedicated building, but
I'm not sure it's the best situation for anybody living either. It seems to me that integrating people that have housing affordability challenges into a market rate building is where they're just in there like everybody else is a better, just at least theoretically, a better situation. But
with that, one thing I'm frustrated, I feel like I don't have enough information, and it would be really helpful to know what the rent differential is for people in market rate buildings that are getting us, you know, they are at a lower rent versus what somebody else would pay for that 650 square foot unit, because I have no idea what that differential is.
I think it's different for every building too.
It probably is, but it'd be nice to know that. I think it'd be a good piece of information to have.
Okay, I'm gonna close the conversation because we're getting near our time. You guys did great. This wasn't easy. Like, we knew it wasn't gonna be easy. We didn't ask you to talk about an easy topic. You weren't, we didn't prepare you for anything. You didn't have all the answers. We didn't have the answers. The idea for today was not about just saying it. It was also about seeing it, right? So when you do these strategies, it's about putting stuff down so everyone can visually see how other people are feeling or how they're expressing the things that are kind of going on for them as well. I think Carolyn and Chair Hovland, you also talked a little bit about the what's next. That really is what's next, right? This was just, we needed some area to focus. I heard you, James, and we do agree. Everyone is important, and we don't necessarily want to take anything off the table is what I heard from you. However, there might be some things that we can focus on. And we're not starting from scratch, as you mentioned. There are a few things that we talked about at session one that have some like tangible, actionable items that might help us to take those, pull those out, extract them, to figure out how do they get us to some of that that success that you were helping us define for you. So that is part two, I would say.
Ongoing.
So thank you for today. Appreciate all your time and commitment to this topic.
Okay, we stand adjourned. All right.